Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
This is Charlie's mic, and this is Warren's mic,
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today, the final episode of A Wealth of Wisdom, our four-part series with Warren Buffett.
Hi!
Becky Quick sits down with the Oracle of Omaha after one heck of a year.
I learned that people don't know as much as they think they know, but the biggest thing you learn is that a pandemic was bound to occur, and this isn't the worst one that's imaginable at all.
What Buffett and partner Charlie Munger learned in their, oh, about 6 or 7 decades watching the economy.
One of the interesting things about the system, though, is that you can't take all the hardship out of it, or it won't work.
Wealth, work, and staying humble, billionaire or not.
Wealth doesn't change people. It makes them more so. If they're jerks to start with, they can be bigger jerks.
Outspoken and honest, the 91 and 97-year-old Berkshire best friends talk stimulus, the pandemic, and the wisdom of age.
I will confidently predict the millennials are going to have a much harder time getting rich than our generation did.
Plus, only in this podcast, Becky Quick on what she's learned from Warren Buffett.
It's not a complicated lesson. You should surround yourself by people who inspire you and people you don't want to disappoint, because that's what it's all about, right? Just making sure that we're all our best selves.
And the world's most famous investor on his longest lasting call.
Never bet against America. So thanks.
Squawk Pod begins right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
You're listening to Squawk Pod from CNBC, and today we are wrapping up a special unscripted conversation with Squawk Box's Becky Quick and about 190-ish years of business wisdom, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. This is our fourth and final podcast on the wealth of wisdom of these two men. We've heard from the Oracle of Omaha and his right-hand man on the lessons of their younger days in business, taking the high road, risk, and Robin Hood. This series of podcasts is our most popular group of episodes in 2021, so we refreshed them for you this week. All four are now available as the most recent in your podcast feed, wherever you're listening now. Buffett and Munger, 91 and 97. Two Nebraska natives who have been friends for more than 6 decades and business partners for more than 5, they built Berkshire Hathaway into one of the largest companies in America, a conglomerate owning railroads, car dealerships, insurance providers, party favors, candy, and ice cream. It's a $600 billion plus powerhouse.
Okay, let me get myself pulled up here. So here's what we're going to do.
Becky Quick has been covering Berkshire and Buffett for years. We hopped on a Zoom.
Awesome.
Yeah, great. Okay.
To talk about the personalities of these two partners and good friends.
They boil things down to a very simple level. They don't get caught up in a lot of BS. Again, it's refreshing, kind of fun to see. And the irreverence that they bring to it is probably the most fun. I remember the first time I ever interviewed Charlie. Wow, it was a long time ago at one of the Berkshire Hathaway annual meetings. I had set up something where I was going to get to sit down with them ahead of time. I think I was more nervous walking into that interview than any interview I've ever done, because I knew enough from watching Charlie that if he thought I was stupid, he'd tell me. If he thought it was a dumb question, he'd tell me.
First of all, thank you very much for joining us today.
Delighted.
I've always prepared and studied and tried to walk into those interviews prepared and ready to go. And again, it's a situation where you listen, just listen and learn.
People are always quoting Mark Twain. Perhaps the comment was apocryphal. History doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes.
For the record, Becky does not ask dumb questions. Here's one of her first interviews with Warren Buffett at the 2006 Berkshire annual meeting.
Now, you still have more than $40 billion in cash, I'm guessing. Are you still looking around? You still have other things?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm looking all the time.
They don't plan any time they sit down for any interview or for the annual meeting. They never talk things out in advance or say who's going to say what. It's just fun to watch their minds work and how they play off of each other and how funny they are about it.
Mr. Buffett, I think we're going to see you right in this one, inside.
Would that be okay?
That'd be perfect.
Becky sat down with Buffett and Munger in Charlie's backyard in California.
Hi, how are you?
And they hit on an idea that has some poignancy now, but that Warren Buffett has been talking about for years. He is very, very bullish on America and its continued and continuing promise. Here he is in 1997.
I think the American economy does awfully well in encouraging adaptation.
And in 2004, despite a war in Iraq and increasing consumer debt.
There's always problems in the future. There are always opportunities in the future. And in this country, the opportunities have won out over the problems over time.
In 2009, just months after a devastating credit meltdown helped to plunge the U.S. into its worst economic crisis since the 1930s.
The one thing I know is that over time, people will live better and better in this country.
And last year, in 2020, at a stark virtual annual meeting, Buffett had a message about getting through hard times.
We're dealing with a virus that spreads its wings in a certain way, and there's all kinds of possibilities, but I definitely come to the conclusion after weighing all that sort of stuff, never bet against America. So thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate your time tonight.
And we'll see you next year.
This country is far better situated than when I was born. And I was born at the optimum time in 1930, up to that point, in the optimum place, America, a male, which had a big set of advantages attached to it at the time. It's better now than it was then. But I was lucky that it wasn't 100 years earlier, 200 years earlier. And Wall Street business, it is producing the goods and services that people like so much better than the goods and services they were receiving when I was born. It's worked. It can work a lot better, in my view, but that'll always be true. And you would hope that anybody that was willing to work 40 hours a week in an economy that's a prosperous would not have trouble raising a couple of kids. There's a lot of goods and services available in this country, and there always should be rewards for bringing forth things that are useful to society. And we're rich enough now where we essentially can have decent medicine and decent education for everybody, and some people don't fit well into a capitalist system. I wouldn't fit well into an athletic system. I mean, if it really paid off, whether you could box the best, you could give me boxing lessons 7 hours a day, and I could read all kinds of books and do everything else, and in the first round, we'd find out what happens when somebody throws a punch at me. Different people come out of the womb in different ways, and a society that's very, very rich should, just like a family that's very, very rich, should take care of the people.
One of the interesting things about the system, though, is that you can't take all the hardship out of it, or it won't work. If you have a heat engine, and if you don't have a big difference between hot and cold and the same damned engine, you can't get any work out of the engine. That's the law of physics. Similarly, in an economy, if everybody had an unearned income, the whole economy would fail. It has to have a certain amount of hardship in it, or the economy doesn't work. And so you never want to get the hardship to zero. You want to get it as low as you can get it, without ruining the system. You take all the hardship out, then the whole system will fail.
It doesn't need extreme hardship, or as it gets more prosperous, it doesn't need that much hardship, because there's always something extra people will want. So you know, the idea that everybody should have three meals a day doesn't, and if you give them three meals a day, it doesn't destroy the incentive to have greater meals.
You see it, and nobody wants more hardship than the system needs to flourish and prosper. But you try and take the hardship down to below zero or near zero, and the whole system will fail. I've known a lot of doctors that ended up filthy rich, and they had one thing in common. They all stopped seeing patients.
We don't want to create greater hardship in order to have this.
No, we don't. We don't. I'm just mentioning it.
What hardships do we need in order to be more productive citizens, Charlie?
Well, you have to need the... No, we don't need it. We're not... But if every 20-year-old kid got $1,000 a week or something, you would have a lot of trouble getting any work done.
You would have a lot that would want $2,000 a week.
The investment portfolio at Berkshire Hathaway tops $300 billion, including stakes in Coca-Cola, Apple, Bank of America, Verizon, American Express. Buffett and Munger's investment strategy, buy companies you know and hold them for a very long time, delivered market-beating performances for 4.5 decades. But the Berkshire portfolio has lagged the S&P 500 for the last 5 and 10 years. Lost their touch? They aren't concerned.
I'm quite comfortable holding Berkshire. I think our businesses are better than the average in the market.
Our businesses, the list of companies that are wholly or partially owned as Berkshire Hathaway subsidiaries, features long-standing American household names, Kraft Heinz, Fruit of the Loom, Dairy Queen, Geico, Duracell, and a big family of brands like this is unusual in corporate America.
They don't believe in a lot of bureaucracy. And it's a really interesting experiment because it's different than any of the other big companies that you look at. And there's something to be said. I think they both, you know, kind of get the hives at the thought of too much bureaucracy. They think it slows things down, makes things counterproductive. They don't like to see it in philanthropy. They don't like to see it in business. They like to streamline things. And there's really something great about that when you have a close working relationship with the people who are actually running the businesses.
Becky, we have accidentally created a very interesting experiment in how well a really big place can be run on a very non-bureaucratic basis with extreme decentralization. We're like a test case for how extreme you can make it. And I would say so far that it's worked better. We get more advantages than disadvantages out of our hands-off management.
That's
you,
true.
Do you agree with that?
That's true. We get very few people that want to copy us.
No. Nobody wants to copy us. And yet, if people study us, they'd find the way we're doing it, it works way better.
Yeah, it has certain disadvantages.
Yes.
When you trust people, occasionally trust is misused. But net, it's worked.
It's a useful experiment that we've done, and I confidently predict that someday somebody will find out that some of this dumb bureaucracy could be eliminated, we'll be better off. As we found we can eliminate some business travel, we're going to find we can get rid of some dumb bureaucracy in American corporations.
It works at large scale, but it doesn't work to produce the kind of returns that, it isn't like we've got something that produces extraordinary returns, but it can be a very decent business at scale operating in a way.
Don't you think we've done better than we would have been if we'd copied the centralized management system?
Well, I wouldn't have wanted to work there.
Well, no, would you? No, of course not.
I'd have resigned or have been fired.
Yeah.
No, I'd rather be in a jail cell with a few people that were interesting, and plenty of reading material than.
No, what you're saying is we may have done it. We have created the decentralization because it suited our nature.
Absolutely.
But we've accidentally created an experiment. Yeah. We've demonstrated that it can work on a big scale. That will eventually prove useful, I think.
It's working on a big scale.
Another experiment? The U.S. economic response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Stimulus checks, direct payments from the federal government have helped millions of Americans boost their finances. $1,200 checks from the pandemic's earliest days followed a few months later by another $600.
So you're talking about a $6.2 trillion bill, nothing like that, and this will deliver urgently needed relief to our nation's families, workers, and businesses. And that's what this is all about.
And the American Rescue Plan in March 2021 distributed $1,400 checks.
This bill represents a historic victory for the American people.
Relief payments were meant to soften the blow from the overnight changes the pandemic brought to our economy.
But there's debate. Some people probably needed the money more than others. Did the cash relief and enhanced unemployment benefits keep people from working? For context, these comments were recorded in spring 2021.
Do you have trouble finding employees in any Berkshire businesses right now?
In a few, yeah, and it's coming. I mean, you can feel it. And the demand is just overwhelming for lots of goods. I mean, the money's out there, and people want to buy things with it. And people that have never had $1,400 in their pocket before, or anything close to $1,400, because they'd sort of worked out what their car payments would be and their house payments would be. So it was designed that they didn't have any money yet. And if they get $1,400 in their pocket, some people will save some of it. Some of them will go to Robinhood and start gambling on stocks. But a lot of them just go out and buy something. And there's certain things that they can't buy. They can't buy live entertainment now, so they can't go and watch somebody. You know, that it's going to open up on that. But that element is out. A trip to Europe is out, or anything. So not only do they have extra money, but they have somewhat less choice. So if you're in the arena where they can play, buying things for their home or whatever it may be, it's a boom.
What businesses can you not find employees for?
Well, we are hiring people, looking for people at a good many of our businesses. And we also have a disrupted supply chain, so that actually is another. But that just makes people hungrier for products.
The ports are so crowded that they're difficulty getting this stuff through the ports. There's a big boom going on in some places.
But when he said ports, for a second I thought he said courts. It's very interesting. In terms of insurance claims in certain areas, there just haven't been any cases. I mean,
the courts are closed.
But the number of people that have more money in their pocket are in better shape with lower credit card balances or a little more savings or something because they've received some checks out of the blue. They won the lottery in a very small way. I mean, you've had it said 85% president said checks went to. Those are 85% lottery checks. When people won. No, they won a prize. And they react as different people do when they win the prize. Some people save, some people reduce debt, some people spend. And they're spending.
But of course, restaurants still have a lot of agony.
But not takeout restaurants.
No, takeout. It's unbelievable.
No, Dairy Queen, we thought we would, you know, when the pandemic broke out, we were working out delaying royalties, and we'd seen all of Dairy Queens, there were small ones in China, close, all that. We thought it was gonna be a disaster. And Dairy Queen, same store sales, you know, it just month after month just gained dramatically in the United States and Canada, but they've gone to takeout. I never thought I'd see lines on it. And so it's been very good for certain types of food outlets, but that's because it's terrible for other kinds of food outlets. We got money out to a lot of people, but if you had a small dry cleaning establishment or a small restaurant that didn't have takeout, you know, you saved over your life. You may have borrowed some money for your relatives to do it. You've killed yourself on it. And I think we ought to just go overboard in trying to locate those people. But I will tell you this, that at NetJets, you know, our people fly in their planes. They own a fraction of them. But it looked initially like the total business had just totally stopped. We had 600 pilots in Europe and 80 planes. And there was one day we had one flight. I don't know who that guy was, but I mean, one flight. And in the United States, we had about 2,000 pilots, and we had about 400 and some planes, and there were days when we had 20 flights. We thought the roof was going to fall in. And, you know, it just came back. And not business travel the same way, but it just overwhelmingly came back. Seven of our competitors got big sums of grants from the U.S. government. Now, it may have looked like they needed them for about 2 days, but the next seven companies, we didn't take any money. It looked like we might need it, but we didn't take any money. And I can understand them applying on the first day. I can't understand the government actually looking at what was happening and giving a lot of money to these next seven guys. It irritates our management, but we're doing fine.
Well, of course, they're going to make some mistakes when they have to act as quickly as they did. And
I'd like the mistakes to be giving money to the small people and not the big ones.
And of course, this modern monetary theory that says you can print money a lot faster than we previously thought.
It's working so far.
It's worked so far. Beautifully so far.
Coming up on Squawk Pod.
Charlie and I have been ungodly lucky in many ways.
Luck, longevity, and living in interesting times.
Oh, I fall in love with Zoom.
How often do you talk to people on Zoom?
At least 3 times a day.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Okay, we're back, and thank you for listening to Squawk Pod. On the first Saturday in May from the 1970s to 2019, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger could be found in Omaha on stage.
Morning, and welcome to Berkshire Hathaway.
Schmoozing with shareholders.
We made it.
Shopping for Heinz ketchup, Brooks running shoes, or any of the products made by the 60-some Berkshire portfolio companies.
Hey. Woo! All the way from Australia.
Buffett also runs a newspaper tossing competition, an ode to one of the few jobs he ever had with a boss. The Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting grew in size from about 20 people in the National Indemnity Insurance Company lunchroom to more than 40,000 crowding into Omaha's biggest convention center. Until the COVID-19 pandemic forced the meeting, like everything else, to go virtual. In 2020, Buffett ran the meeting in Omaha with just Berkshire Hathaway Vice Chairman Greg Abel at his side.
We'll go to Becky Quick, who for a couple of hours will grill me and Greg on questions she's selected from a huge batch that I'm told she's received.
In 2021, Buffett and Munger, with Abel and Vice Chair Ajit Jain, were back together on stage at a virtual meeting held in Charlie's hometown of Los Angeles.
We will go to Becky Quick, and she will ask any of the four of us questions she has selected and which we don't, she doesn't share with us. So, Becky, over to you.
The last year, you both had your lives changed pretty dramatically from the pandemic, I hear. Charlie, I hear you're pretty adept at Zoom.
Oh, I fall in love with Zoom.
How often do you talk to people on Zoom?
At least 3 times a day. I made a deal in Australia. All I can say is I fall in love with Zoom.
They must have done it on Zoom. I mean, obviously, this deal was a known deal.
Yeah. Yes, and I think Zoom is here to assist. It just adds so much convenience.
Well, particularly for 97 and getting around. But Charlie and I have talked a lot, obviously. We haven't talked on Zoom yet. I mean,
but it's not because
I'm his non-Zoom guy.
No.
Why don't you like Zoom?
I don't see any plus to it particularly. And I did it once or twice and they had a whole screen of people. I just didn't think it was adding experience. I'd rather have my, you know, feet on the desk and I find the telephone a very satisfactory instrument. I mean,
so how does life change post-pandemic? How does work change? And how does it go back to normal, I guess? What do you think happens?
Well, I think a lot of business travel will never come back. Just corporation after corporation deciding one meeting a year, two meetings a year in person and the rest Zoom. And I think that's here to stay. Yeah. And of course, what's happened to office demand is just, think of the agonies in that field now. And a lot of people have found they don't need to be there. I think a lot of people are gonna decide, work 3 days a week and stay home the other. I think all kinds of things are gonna happen that we don't go back to what we did before.
Some of our businesses will change a lot and some of them won't change hardly at all. It'll be interesting. I would say this, in terms of the whole pandemic, in terms of predicting both the economic and how the virus would behave, you know, it surprised us in a lot of ways. It surprised, you know, and we still don't know. We know a lot about this virus. There's a lot of things we don't know yet. And if you look at the graphs of how it's hit different countries and everything, it just shows you how a very advanced economically world can get disrupted by something that in ways that even when you're in it, you can't predict.
But
something.
Some people did better than we did. Again, the Chinese simply totalitarian state, they simply shut down the country for 6 weeks. And that turned out to be exactly the right thing to do. And they didn't let any contact. You picked up your groceries in a box in the apartment, and that's all the contact you had with anybody for 6 weeks. And when it was all over, they kind of went back to work. It happened, they did it exactly right.
But there are other cases of shutdowns, and the shutdowns really, they thought they were model examples. And then now they're experiencing problems. And then you had other countries, you know,
Sweden.
Sweden says we're not going to do it, and they seem to be working fine for a while. And then this has been very, very, very unpredictable.
Very difficult. Yeah.
And it's not over. I mean, in terms of the unpredictability, and in terms of the economic. It's been very unpredictable, but it's worked out better than people anticipated for most people and most businesses. And it's just, for no fault of their own, it's just decimated all kinds of people and their hopes.
It didn't create just a return to normal. It created fabulous success they didn't anticipate. Yeah. The auto dealers are coining money that they wouldn't have had except for the pandemic.
Sure.
Coining money.
And we own 80 some to auto dealers, and we were preparing for disaster. And all of the dealers, we have partners in each dealership, they very sincerely felt that they were going to have one hell of a problem in March and April. Some might have wanted to go in for the assistance from the government. We wouldn't let them because they're a rich parent. But they honestly believed it. We honestly believed it. We didn't know what was going to happen with NetJets in terms of the demand, and it has been, you know, it's been just been different than a lot of people thought. The banks were scared stiff in the middle of March. I mean, they saw everybody taking down their lines of credit. Why do people take down their lines of credit when they don't need it? Because they're afraid it won't be there next week.
It's become such a part of our lives now. Social distancing, remote work, masks. But the COVID-19 pandemic arrived and sent a shock through the economic system in this country.
It's an extraordinary shock, unlike anything certainly that's happened in my lifetime.
That's Jay Powell, chair of the Federal Reserve. The Fed, the U.S. Central Bank, went to unprecedented measures to prop things up.
The Fed takes actions such as these only in extraordinary circumstances, like those we face today.
Supporting U.S. corporate bonds and helping companies brace for impact when our spending behavior, our earning behavior, changed so much, so fast.
We're committed to using our full range of tools to support the economy in this challenging time. We're going to use them forcefully, proactively, and aggressively.
And if you get enough people believing something won't be there next week in banking, it won't be there next week, absent the Federal Reserve. So we had a run on money market funds. I mean, we had something that was looked even more serious, I would say, than 2008 and 9, because we had the physical problems on top of all the economic, and it was coming faster. We just don't know what the virus is going to do. And we know a whole lot about it, and we don't, and we've had very good luck and smarts on vaccines. But the virus isn't, I hope it's done, and or close to done, and I think it's, the odds are very good that it's close to done, but I do not think it's a certainty whatsoever.
One thing that maybe surprised you most, something you learned the last year?
I learned that people don't know as much as they think they know, but the biggest thing you learn is that a pandemic was bound to occur, and this isn't the worst one that's imaginable at all. And Bill Gates could give a TED talk and have millions of people listen, and everybody nods their head and agrees with him. And the Nuclear Threat Initiative, which I participated in, brings out a massive report, and working with Johns Hopkins and everything, and nobody pays any attention to it about it. And people have a terrible time. Society has a terrible time preparing for things that are remote but are possible. And we've lost 560 or 70,000, actually a little more than that, because some of the deaths are unrecorded. And the world doesn't prepare well. We know there's a nuclear, chemical, biological, and now cyber threat. And we know, you know, it has, each one of those has terrible possibilities. Charlie and I have been ungodly lucky in many ways, but the luckiest thing was actually being around at this time and place. And we also had these problems on how to, 200 countries with over 7.5 billion people, and a lot of tensions between them and all sorts of things, and different systems of selected governments and all that. And how do we actually do this so that mankind, 50 and 100 and 200 years from now, should enjoy the incredibly better life that could be enjoyed while not screwing it up?
Charlie, how about you?
Well, how could I not be thankful for the way life is unraveled in my life? It's just, it's almost incredible. I remember 10 cent a bushel corn, 25 cent a bushel wheat. You know, I remember people coming to the door wanting to do a little work around the house to get a meal. And the Great Depression went on and didn't fix. And to have the world be as peaceful as it's been and as prosperous as it's been, and all these new things be invented, of course it's been wonderful. It's been a wonderful life for all of us. And
not all of us.
Not all of us.
Oh, and the rich one accumulate more chips, which they can't use. You know, I mean, they have more claim checks on the labor and of the rest of the world, which is what money is. It's a claim check on other people's output in the future. And you know, there has been a big tilt toward particularly toward the super wealthy. It's not because they're terrible people. Wealth doesn't change people, it makes them more so. If they're jerks to start with, they can be bigger jerks. And if they're good people, they can actually make them even better people. It's a better world, but it's actually a somewhat, if you look at the deaths of children 5 years and younger in the world, it's been cut in half in the last, I don't know, 40 years or thereabouts. I mean, we're making some progress in the world, just generally, as a world. But I also think that the nature of capitalism is that as it gets more specialized, more of the rewards flow to the top. I mean, if we were living in 1800 and we're all a bunch of farmers, pretty much, or shopkeepers, the difference between the best employee and the worst employee might be 1.5 to 1 or 2 to 1. It's extended enormously. You know, if you're the best on television, you make a lot of money. And if you're just one layer down, it's jumping off a cliff. Same way in baseball. I mean, in the AAA ball, you make some money, and if you somehow get to the bigs, you've got a ratio where you're making 100, maybe 200 times what Joe DiMaggio or Ted Williams was making. And it's not because you're a better ball player. It's because the stadium's increased from 30,000 people to 300 million people. And that's because some guy discovered television and then cable television and then pay television and then regional sports networks and all these things outside, you increase the size of the stadium. So capitalism pays off much bigger now as society gets more advanced. The range between the top and the number 20 or the number 50 or the number 100 in any area.
All that is true, but at the same exact time, I will confidently predict the millennials are going to have a much harder time getting rich than our generation did.
I'd love
They start with a big high valuation for everything, and the houses have been driven up to ridiculous prices in the places where there's big demand. It's going to be very hard for the next generation. There's going to be more equality of outcome in the next generation because it's going to be so hard for most people to get rich or even well off.
People are going to be living better 20 or 50 years.
Yes, but it's going to be distributed more equally, I think, because of...
So far, it's gone the other way, Charlie. They reduced the tax rates for us.
Yes, no. So far, it's gone the other way, but I think everything's going to go back the other way. I think equality is going to have a good day going forward.
We'll see. What we won't see is Charlie.
We won't see.
So 60-plus years of deal-making, friendship, investment, in companies, in society, in the future, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger find one of their biggest successes to be their partnership. Here's what Becky said about it.
It's not a complicated lesson. It's probably just one we don't sit and reflect on often enough. You should surround yourself by people who inspire you and people you don't want to disappoint, because that's what it's all about, right? Just making sure that we're all our best selves. And it's such a universal truth. I think all of us can kind of look at the relationships we've had over the years and what inspires you to do better. And it's really those people who put faith in you. And wow, you don't want to let them down.
You two have been friends for over 60 years. And I'll just ask you one final question. What's one thing that you really admire about the other?
Well, I like the humor and all that, but dependable is really important.
Warren, what do you admire about Charlie?
Well, I admire really just the kind of person he has been. I mean, he has contributed to given individuals and also to society. I mean, he goes well beyond buying a stock and selling it higher. He's designed dormitories and helped build them. You know, it's an uphill fight all the time. But Charlie has worked on big problems, and he doesn't need to. But all the time, you know, I mean, Charlie has never shaded anything he's told me, you know, since we met, in terms of presenting it to me in a different way than reality. Or he's never done anything I've seen that's self-serving in terms of being a partner in any kind of way. He makes me better than I would otherwise be. I don't want to disappoint
you.
You
had
him.
The same thing in reverse.
Yeah. It does work that way. I mean, yeah. It's better to associate with people that are better than you are. I mean,
it really is. It really helps.
And if you associate with people that are worse than you are, I mean, you are really in trouble. I mean, you're gonna descend into it. I went through that 3 or 4 month period. Now, I was reacting to some other things, but I started, you know, when the other kids stole stuff, I stole stuff, and I was not going the right direction for a while. And you want people that are going in a better direction to take you along with them.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you both very much for your time today. We really appreciate it. That's great. Thank you, gentlemen.
Room 2.
You'd rather be in jail than work at a corporation.
Thank you for listening to A Wealth of Wisdom, our series with the two hardest working 90-somethings around, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. Special thanks for this series to Becky Quick, CNBC's managing editor Lacey O'Toole, Alex Crippen, the mastermind behind the Warren Buffett Archive, that's buffett.cnbc.com, and thank you to the Nebraska State Archives. We're taking tomorrow off ahead of the New Year's holiday. Happy 98th birthday to Charlie Munger on January 1st. Squawk Pod is produced by me, Katie Kramer, Cameron Costa, and Caroline Rahotis. This podcast is edited by John Lazration. And we all wish you a very happy new year. May there be good things ahead in 2022.
Sometimes it takes a different approach
to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.